Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 132. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud. Pete? Pete's dead.
It's good to be here, Chris.
Good to have you back, more or less. We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. It's going to be a bit of a retro-themed show this week, it seems, because we've got some new games to discuss, we have some news to talk about, and then our big topic for the week is going to be what we're calling Lost in the Past. It's about things that we miss and we don't miss from gaming eras gone by. But before we get into any of that retro stuff, let's start by talking about a new release on Nintendo systems. It is the latest update to Shantae Half-Genie Hero, which just came out yesterday as we record this. This is the new costume DLC pack.
Not a week goes by where you don't somehow work Shantae into the podcast.
Well, it seems that way, doesn't it? But, you know, there's good reason. It's a good series. And there's this new update that's got me firing up my Wii U again, actually. That's what I've been playing it on. I've been holding out on the Switch version for the physical edition that comes out next month. So I was playing this on Wii U.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
And so far, it's pretty cool. It's got three new costumes that, you know, really change up the gameplay. It has Ninja Mode, Officer Mode, and Beach Mode. And you get these new outfits that add all new gameplay modes. It's not just aesthetic for $7.99.
I'm trying to imagine you pulling off those modes in real life.
You probably shouldn't try to imagine that.
Beach mode, cop mode.
So first of all, we've got ninja mode, which is, you know, as the name implies, you get these cool ninja abilities. And so you're given a sword, throwing stars, a built-in back dash, enhanced movement speed, wall jumping, teleporting, just all this cool stuff. And there really aren't any drawbacks to it. It's just cool and fun. Now, you don't get any inventory items. You only have the three hearts that you start with. So it really is this arcade action-oriented mode where you just level up your strength by collecting gems, and then you lose gems when you get hit. But even though it lacks the adventure elements of the main game, it's still really, really fun. There are a few hidden collectibles to find, but really it's just this action-oriented spin that gives you all these really cool moves, you know, added to Shantae Half-Genie Hero.
So are these like new levels you play through, or are you playing through the old levels with the new costumes?
You are playing through the old levels with the new costumes and the new abilities.
Gotcha.
And to be honest, I would love to see them, you know, come back to this ninja stuff and make like a brand new game around it. I mean, it's cool to go through, you know, familiar territory with these new abilities and stuff, but, you know, it would be great to see Way Forward make an all new game around these play mechanics. That would be fantastic. And whether it's Shantae or whether it's something else, I think would be really, really fun. So then after that, there's Officer Mode, which combines Shantae with Mighty Switch Force, which was a game that was released on 3DS and Wii U and other systems as well, I think. And so you're dressed up like the main character from that game, Officer Paddy Wagon. And, you know, that game was like this puzzle platformer series. Yeah, isn't it? And, you know, even though the levels aren't really changing, the thing about Mighty Switch Force is that your ability was to move these blocks to the foreground from the background, and vice versa. You know, you hit your A button and it just switches.
Yep.
You know, that's the title, you know, how these blocks move, and so creates these puzzle-oriented levels. And so there are all these blocks strewn throughout all the Shantae stages, and so it really does make it feel like a new game.
Wow.
So not only do you have to navigate the levels using these moving blocks that you control, but your main weapon is a projectile weapon, just like in Mighty Switch Force. And it really does feel like a Mighty Switch Force game, you know, with this heavy puzzle emphasis. And it also is definitely very fun.
Huh, cool. That actually sounds like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. For $8, I feel like getting just the ninja mode and the officer mode is totally worth the money.
But that's not all, Chris. There's also beach mode.
Yes, that's right. There is beach mode, which is basically a survival mode. And it's kind of a little bit like torture.
All right.
And like the other modes, it's basically an arcade-style mode, but you don't really get any cool abilities. Instead, there's this sun gauge that is constantly filling up, because Shantae in this mode is running around in her beach attire. And so when the sun gauge fills up, you start roasting and your health drains out. So you constantly have to be on the run to find these sunscreen pickups or find water to hide in. And this is just constantly going on, you know, even if you're indoors, which I know makes no sense. And even in boss fights. So you know, you're fighting this boss, you're trying to collect these you know, icons so your health doesn't just completely start draining. So it's really, really difficult. This is a challenging mode for, you know, like the hardest of hardcore players. I mean, you know, on the other hand, you do get to throw beach balls at enemies and you do get to play as Shantae in a bikini. So, you know, at least there's that. But honestly, in my opinion, I would say this is probably the least interesting mode of the three. But like I said, if you want a challenge, if you want something that's even harder than the game's hardcore mode, then, you know, this one is definitely for you.
Running around on the beach, hiding from the sun, you know, looking for sunscreen. I mean, that kind of sounds like a day at the beach to you, right, Chris?
Pretty much. It's a lot like real life, only I would say I probably don't look as good in a bikini.
That's all right.
Anyway, like I was saying, I think this is totally worth the $8. You know, I don't think I'm going to play beach mode a lot, but who knows? You know, after I get through ninja mode and officer mode, maybe I will want to get this, you know, super hardcore challenge in. But yeah, I think it's a pretty cool extra addition to extend the life of an already great game.
Cool. It's also pretty cool that it's out for Wii U as well. So if you own it on that, you can get it there.
Right, right. Yeah, I was a backer of the original Kickstarter, so I was able to get it for that. But I will be getting it all over again when the physical version comes out on Switch next month.
Oh, that's cool.
However, in addition to that, another game I've also been playing, and this feeds into the retro-tastic stuff I was talking about earlier, I've been playing Arcade Archives Punch-Out for Switch.
Nice. I'm a little jealous. I actually wanted to pick this one up, and I didn't get a chance to.
I was wondering if you picked it up yet.
Yeah, what do you think, Chris?
Well, you know, I've been wanting to play this at home for a long time, because every time I played this game in the arcade, I would always get my butt kicked, and so it's like, okay, now I can finally experience this game and enjoy it at my own pace. And what I have learned is a couple of things. First of all, it's still really, really hard.
Yeah, I always remember having a really hard time with this game.
And, you know, part of that was the controls, because, you know, one of the big play mechanics in that game is this big lever that you shift to, you know, basically have your hands low or high. And if your hands are high, then you block high and you punch high, or you have your hands low and you block low. And it's a lot easier to play that when you're on the Switch and don't have to worry about this big joystick that may or may not work properly. Right. That was one of the issues I always had with the arcade machine.
Right.
But it's still pretty clunky, even this version. You know, sometimes I feel like it's not as responsive as it should be, and that leads me to the other thing I learned, which is this still isn't nearly as good as the NES game. It's just much less intuitive. The entire dodge and counter aspect of the game doesn't really exist in the same way.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm familiar with how Mike Tyson's Punch-Out works, and, you know, Punch-Out starring Mr. Dream work, and, you know, it's like, you know, you see the punch coming, you dodge, you counter, you punch him in the face a whole bunch, and in this, you know, I mic it in one punch after that, and then they'll punch me right back, and so I'm still kind of learning the ropes, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, I dodge, I counter, and then I get blocked and clobbered, and so in some of the earlier fights, I was just having more luck, like, jabbing away at my opponent than I was trying to use a ton of strategy.
Right.
So that was a little bit disappointing.
Now, are you still Little Mac in this game, or are you just this see-through, you know, green wire?
You're the see-through green wire. I mean, I don't think they've ever really said for sure whether that's supposed to be the same character or not. You know, this came out several years before Mike Tyson's Punch-Out did.
Right.
You get to enter your initials at the very beginning. I name my character Mac every time. So as far as I'm concerned, it's Little Mac, even though he looks different. He's got green hair.
Right. He's a little bigger, too, I think.
Yeah, he's a little bit bigger. But the thing I like about this game is that it is a new experience for me. You know, I had never fought Kid Quick before, and now I can say that I have. Oh, I had never fought Pizza Pasta before, who's, I think, your fifth opponent in the game.
Yep.
And now I finally have. You know, I'm a little bit underwhelmed about Pizza Pasta. For some reason, I always imagined him, you know, like with, you know, spaghetti on his head or a chef's hat or something. But no, he's just kind of a normal-looking guy.
Yeah. I almost imagined Pizza the Hutt from Spaceballs.
Yeah, sorry. He's nothing quite like that.
That's too bad.
But yeah, I imagine, like, you know, a combination of the boxer and the Swedish Chef and the Muppets or something. I don't know.
Right.
But no, he's kind of normal. The other thing that's strange about the game is that, you know, the arcade game had this dual screen aspect.
Right.
You know, long before the DS and the 3DS, you know, they had two stacked screens, one on top of the other. So when that translates to your TV, you have a few options. You can, you know, make them go on top of each other, which makes it be, you know, fairly small because each screen takes up about maybe a sixth of your screen.
Right.
Or you can put them side by side, which is also kind of weird because then the action's on one half of your screen, your health bar is on the other half of the screen. If you, you know, take your eyes off the action for a second, look at your health bar, it's like, oh, I got punched in the face and now I'm knocked out. So, you know, adapting to that is kind of bizarre, but you could also completely turn the image sideways, which is really cool. Especially if you're just using your Switch as a screen. So, you know, you disconnect your Joy-Cons, you turn your Switch sideways, or maybe you use, you know, some, you know, bit of third-party technology to do it a more convenient way. But if you do it that way, you know, you get the whole, you know, dual screen experience, but, you know, then it is kind of on the small side too. And in a game like this, I feel like the bigger the image is, the easier it is to see what's happening, the easier it is to actually, you know, counter your opponent's moves. So I feel like there's not any perfect solution, but it is pretty cool that you can do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's cool that that option exists. I imagine if you could somehow rotate your TV, you could do the same on that.
Yeah, totally. You can definitely do it on your TV. Just, you know, I figure most people, they probably can't. But if you can, then that would obviously be the best way to play. It would be really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So, yeah, I definitely had some issues. I still feel like, you know, there are some things that could be better. However, I am, you know, really happy to have this game at home. It is a much better experience than playing the actual arcade machine. I can finally beat some opponents. I don't have to worry about whether the joystick is janky, but still, you know, it really can't hold a candle to the NES game. It is still very tough. Continues are actually limited.
Right.
So, you know, be prepared to start over at Glass Joe a whole bunch of times.
Right. Now, I heard that in the options, you can actually adjust the difficulty level. Did you mess with that at all?
I don't think I have yet, but yes, it's true. I think there are like four difficulty settings that you can adjust. There are also graphical filters, of course, and like I said, the option to change around the screen presentation.
It's kind of funny to imagine that, you know, depending on the arcade game you played as a kid, you would sometimes be playing a really hard version or a really, you know, easier version.
Yep, that's true.
It's just kind of funny you wouldn't actually know going into it until you're like losing mad quarters.
Yep, totally true, totally true. Now, I have to say, Pete, you know, you were at Nintendo for quite a while, and I heard this rumor I was wondering if you could comment on.
Uh-oh.
I've heard that the voice in the arcade Punch-Out game, you know, the guy who's always like going, body blow, body blow, yeah, that voice belongs to Nintendo Executive Vice President of Operations Don James. Is that true?
You know, I've never heard that. It's entirely possible.
Well, I guess it's something for you to investigate, huh?
Yeah. Speaking of sound effects, I read an impression where they were saying that, you know, the unique thing about this version of the game is that you're actually able to finally listen to the sound effects. Like, normally when you play this game, you're in a arcade and you're hearing all sorts of other nonsense. So there are a lot of, like, weird, minute details to the game that you didn't otherwise hear. So I think that's kind of interesting too. I really want to pick this up because of all those reasons. It's like, you know, finally the version of Punch-Out I've never really spent a lot of time playing. I mean, probably only spent an hour or two max.
Right, right.
Which is kind of funny compared to the other amount of time I've spent playing the other Punch-Out games.
I probably played it like, you know, 5 to 10 minutes before.
Right, exactly. Like max 20 minutes, I bet.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway. Worth picking up, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it is worth picking up, but, you know, there are a lot of caveats. It's not the amazing experience I was hoping for, but, you know, it's great as a historical curiosity, and it is really cool to finally be able to play this game on its own terms. Just don't expect it to be as great as the NES or Super NES versions of the game.
I will consider myself warned.
All right. Another retro game I've been playing on the Switch is the port of the arcade game Bad Dudes.
Are you a bad enough dude?
I might be. I very well might be. Are you familiar with Bad Dudes, Pete? I'm guessing that you are.
I am. You know, didn't ninjas kidnap the president? And they're,
yes. Yes, exactly.
And are you a bad enough dude to take it back?
Right, yeah. This game goes down in history as having one of the best, and by that I mean most insane stories of all time. The president, apparently President Ronald Reagan from the 80s, has been kidnapped by ninjas and you, as some random muscle-bound dude and possibly your friend, must go out and rescue him. And the thing about this is that these are like the world's worst ninjas because they all die in one hit. Like you punch them in the face or you kick them and they're dead. However, what they lack in resilience, they make up for in sheer numbers because you know, you're fighting through just level after level of all these ninjas that just keep coming after you. So you're going through the New York streets, on the back of a truck, through a sewer, through a forest, on top of a train, in a cave, and of course the evil enemy base at the end, and you're killing lots and lots of these weak-ass ninjas in effort to save President Reagan.
Well, plus you're white, and that usually doesn't make for a good ninja, but no, never mind.
Well, you're not a ninja, you're just some dude.
Oh, right, you're a bad dude, you're not a ninja.
Yeah, you're just these two random dudes I imagine the CIA just found on the street somewhere and said, hey, can you rescue the president for us? We're too busy.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of these ninjas drop life-replenishing sodas when they die.
Right.
Karnov shows up as a boss, and then he shows up as zombie Karnov again after that. So it's just, like, really brainless. It's super cheap as well.
Yeah.
You know, this was designed as a quarter muncher, totally, so you're just going to die a lot. So it's just really dumb, but it's still kind of fun. You know, it's got a co-op mode, and then when you rescue Ronnie at the end, he invites you out for burgers. So, you know, what more do you want from a stupid, brainless 80s co-op beat-em-up?
That was a Data East game, right?
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's a top arcade hit.
It does have 6 screen filter options, so you can opt to make it blurrier and give it scan lines, but it does not seem to have an option that lets you actually make it, you know, pixel perfect with crisp visuals, which I think is really, really strange. I mean, even if you choose no filter, you still get some smoothing and blurring, and, you know, that's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
On top of that, there really aren't any other gameplay options for difficulty or anything like that. I mean, we're just talking about how in Punch-Out, you know, it's one of the things is it gives you access to changing things like the difficulty and the timers, but in this, there's none of that. You can adjust the aspect ratio. Like I said, you can adjust these filters to make it blurrier and blurrier. And I guess you can create one save state, but other than that, this is like a no-frills port, and, you know, this game is also $8, and I don't really think it's worth it. If I had known that there are basically no options, no super crisp, pixel perfect visual option to choose from, I'm not sure that I would have gone ahead and paid for it. And like I said, the game is very dumb, and I think almost all the enjoyment I'm getting out of it is pure nostalgia. So
It's interesting. So who put out this exactly? Because it wasn't Hamster Games now, was it?
No, this is not an Arcade Archives title. It's put out by someone called Flying Tiger Entertainment, and it's actually called Johnny Turbo's Arcade Bad Dudes. And Johnny Turbo was like a mascot for the TurboGrafx-16, and now someone has revived him and is being like used as wrapping for doing a few arcade ports onto the Switch, and I really don't understand it. It's very bizarre, but it's totally true. So, yeah, Johnny Turbo's Arcade presents Bad Dudes, but it's still the original Bad Dudes in, you know, all its original glory. So,
Chris, I didn't want to tell you this, but I'm behind Johnny Turbo's Arcade.
Don't you wish. There'd be way more facial hair in the game if that were true.
So, Chris, just random question. Is there any other arcade games that are just, you know, totally random out there like Bad Dudes that you would like to see ported to the Switch?
Oh.
That you haven't been able to get your hands on yet?
Well, if I were going to get, you know, any arcade games ported over to Switch, I would ask Sega to dip into their back catalog. You know, I'd love to see them bring out some of their old stuff. A particular favorite of mine that's never been ported to any home system is Golden Axe, Revenge of Death Adder. So if there was anything I could conjure into existence, it would be that for sure.
Mm. Well, maybe I'll make it so.
Yeah, if you've got the power to do that, you know, call up Sonic the Hedgehog and make him deliver it. All right, let's move along then from game impressions and discuss a little bit of news. Continuing the retro theme of this episode, Capcom has finally announced some details on the ports of the Mega Man X games that are coming to Switch. And what we have found out is that it is arriving in 2 collections, Mega Man X Legacy Collection 1 and 2, coming out on July 24th.
Wow.
So we now know it's 2 separate collections, and on Switch, you can either buy them both digitally, so they're $19.99 each, which is, you know, just like Mega Man Legacy Collection is going to be. And in addition to that, you can buy the physical package, which lets you get the first game physical on a Switch cartridge, and then you get a download code for Legacy Collection 2. Meanwhile, if you are a PS4 or Xbox One owner, you can buy an actual, you know, full physical release on discs, which, you know, as a Switch owner, you know, I find that to be, you know, pretty pathetic and lame.
I bet you do.
I mean, I'm a PS4 owner also, but you know, I'm kind of thinking maybe I should get the PS4 version so I can actually get this on-disc game instead of having to download, you know, Mega Man Legacy Collection 2 on Switch. So we'll see.
My suggestion is to get them both.
You never know. It's possible. I might. Where I'm concerned, such things are always a possibility. But, you know, I also think that breaking it up this way is very, very odd, because Mega Man X Legacy Collection 1 includes Mega Man X 1, 2, 3, and 4, which is awesome. Those are all great games. And then we have Mega Man X Legacy Collection 2, including Mega Man X 5, 6, 7, and 8, which is fairly crappy.
I mean, yeah.
Mega Man X5 is decent, and Mega Man X8 is also pretty good, but 6 and 7 are really, really poor. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, how this is going to shape out for Capcom. Like, how many people are actually going to buy the second Mega Man X Legacy Collection, knowing that the games in there are just not nearly as good as the first one? I mean, if I were them, I'd probably try to put them all together and
right.
You know, sell it that way.
But they can't just fit that all in one disc, Chris. That's way too much technology.
Well, apparently on PS4, it is going to be on two discs.
That's so
I think
weird.
That actually is the case. I mean, there is a lot of extra stuff, though, so that might have something to do with it.
Yeah, still.
So in addition to the full 8 games, there is what they're calling an X Challenge mode, where you fight multiple bosses at once from multiple games. So you might be fighting, you know, bosses from Mega Man X and Mega Man X4 at the same time. You know, that was in the example they showed. You get to choose 3 weapons to bring into the battle with you, so you'll actually be using weapons against, you know, enemies, you know, that weren't really in the same game together. And so that's, you know, kind of nuts for us Mega Man fans who are into that sort of thing. You know, it's a little bit of a, you know, what if crossover scenario that we never would have imagined being able to do.
Yeah, totally.
Then on top of that, there are, you know, assorted graphical filters and a museum mode that's packed with music and artwork and game trailers and packaging images, collectible images, and most importantly, the Day of Sigma anime, which was included with the PSP game Maverick Hunter X. And, you know, that was a pretty neat inclusion there. I just hope that it's up-res so it doesn't look like, you know, they just took a PSP video and, you know, turned it into something for, you know, modern technology.
Right.
But, you know, if they did that, that'll be pretty darn awesome.
You know, Chris, now that they let you use any weapon against any boss, potentially, fanboys will be able to make a Excel sheet and be able to, like, figure out exactly how many, you know, saw blades that certain bosses can take and realize, you know, who stacks up to be more powerful than the other one.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of interesting possibilities there.
Mm-hmm.
Are you planning to pick up the Mega Man X collections? Obviously, I am.
Honestly, I probably will, as you mentioned, pick up Collection 1. Those are the those are the games I remember and love.
Yeah, those are the ones that all got their start on the Super NES, so that makes a lot of sense.
And me, I have no problem picking up the digital version. That's kind of how I prefer my games, even though I know that makes you die a little inside when I say that.
Yeah, understandable, understandable. That seems like a fairly reasonable choice in this case.
Yeah, and the price seems to be right, so it'll tide me over until 11 comes out.
Very cool. There might be hope for you yet, Pete.
We'll see.
Speaking, though, of you know, classic retro games coming to the Nintendo Switch, the folks over at SNK have announced the SNK 40th Anniversary Collection coming out this fall, I believe courtesy of the folks at NIS America.
Wow, 40th Anniversary. That's like older than you and I.
Yeah, indeed. And there are 13 games announced for this collection so far, including Alpha Mission, Athena, Crystallis, Ikari Warriors 1, 2, and 3, Guerrilla War, POW, Prehistoric Isle, Psycho Soldier, Street Smart, TNK3, which I have no idea what that is, and Vanguard. And in most cases, you know, where applicable, it will include both the arcade version and the NES version of all these games.
Wow. That's actually pretty impressive. At first, I didn't really care so much, but now after hearing you talk about all the things that are included, that's a whopper.
Yeah, and I believe there are additional games that they just haven't announced yet.
Huh.
So yeah, that sounds pretty cool to me. I mean, Crystalis, you know, there was no arcade version, so we'll just be getting the NES version of that.
Yep.
And stuff like Psycho Soldier and Vanguard, there were no NES versions, so it's only the arcade games. But yeah, it's pretty cool. I don't think I've ever seen a collection before that's done anything like that. So that is pretty darn nifty.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Ikari Warriors, at least the NES version, but I have played a little bit of the arcade version.
Yeah, and you know, these games haven't been re-released any time recently. I mean, after SNK went in with the Neo Geo, it's pretty much just been all Neo Geo games ever since then, but we never got any of the NES ports on Virtual Console or anything like that. So it's pretty rad to finally be able to get all of these on a home system after so many years.
Yeah, no kidding. Hopefully it's better than the Bayou Billy's Turbo game or whatever. Johnny Turbo's what? Arcade collection?
Johnny Turbo's arcade? Bayou Billy? What are you talking about?
It's the cold medicine talking.
Anyway, in addition to the game, there's also going to be a museum mode, and there is also a limited edition version of the game that's up for pre-order on NIS America's website that includes an art book and a soundtrack and also collectible packaging.
Ooh. Are you thinking about getting that?
I have already pre-ordered it.
Holy.
Maybe that's just because there is no regular version to pre-order yet. I'm not sure. You know, maybe I'll cancel the order. But yes, right now I am all in and signed up for the limited edition.
Cool. Let me know how that goes.
Yeah, it's going to be out later this year.
Please look forward to it.
Speaking of classic franchises, the folks at Natsume have also been dropping some new details on some upcoming titles. They have revealed some extra news about Harvest Moon Light of Hope, which is coming to Switch fairly soon. They've revealed a new character named Soleil, who is a gem sprite and a romance marriage candidate in the Switch version of the game.
Okay.
You know, of course, like, past Harvest Moon games, you know, you can get married to various characters. You know, there are bachelors and bachelorettes. You know, you start a family. That's how Harvest Moon has always been. But in the previously released version of Harvest Moon Light of Hope, which I believe was on PC, it did not have this new character, Soleil. So this character's in there, and in addition to being a gem sprite who helps you out and a romance candidate, it also comes into play as a second character that can be played in co-op mode. So it actually has a two-player co-op for this Harvest Moon game, which I'm not sure if it's a series first or not, but it's definitely a cool inclusion.
Yeah, no kidding.
And for the record, even though Soleil starts as a gem sprite, he will turn into, or I should say it will turn into, either a male or female character. I don't know if you get to choose, or it is depending on your character's gender, so it can actually be married by the player character, regardless of what gender that character is. In addition to that, they've announced four batches of DLC will be coming to the game. You know, hopefully that means it is still a very complete and meaty experience right out of the gate with the full game. But it's also kind of cool to see they'll be supporting it down the road with even more content.
Yeah, maybe just more people to marry or something.
Something like that. Who knows? In addition to that news about Harvest Moon, Natsume has also disclosed the release date of Wild Guns Reloaded, which is actually very soon. It is just coming out next week. It is out on April 17th.
Holy doodle.
Yeah. So that is the Wild West meets steampunk co-op shooter, sort of an enhanced remake of the Super NES classic. And, I really like the little bit I play this game so far, so I'm totally looking forward to that one coming out when it hits the Switch in the very, very near future.
Yeah, me too. I want to see this one.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool.
I actually really like the art style of this one. Seems to be, 2D, like us old school folk enjoy.
Yeah, totally. The game is mostly hand-drawn 2D artwork. Looks pretty spectacular.
Yeah, you don't see that much anymore.
Yeah, it's a very nice throwback. Moving on to something completely different, the folks over at Xseed Games have announced a new title that is coming to Switch. It is the latest game in the Senran Kagura series called Senran Kagura Reflections.
Uh-oh.
And, the previous Sunrun Kagura games were mostly beat-em-ups, or in one case, there was one that was a water gun-based shooter, you know, sort of their answer to Splatoon, I guess. But this one, you know, they haven't really said exactly what it is, but they're describing it as interactive storytelling. And as best I can tell, it is sort of like a visual novel mixed with scenes where you give ninja girls massages. You use the Joy-Cons as your hands, and you use the HD Rumble to find, you know, the best way to help, you know, soothe these characters and help them relax. And it starts by giving massages to Asuka, the main character of the Sunrun Kagura series.
No comment.
So I think, you know, it's basically a groping game, probably, and an excuse to see ninja girls in compromising positions.
Hmm. Are you going to be picking this one up, Chris?
I don't have any comment about that.
Fair enough.
The game is going to be download only. It's going to be coming out this summer, and there will be plenty of DLC for other characters. So if Asuka's not your favorite, you know, maybe there'll be another character who floats your boat. Honestly, the past Sunrun Kagura games actually have had a lot of characterization and surprisingly deep stories, so there might be more to this one than just fan service, but it remains to be seen in this case. My suspicion is the game is going to be M-rated, but you never know. The original Sunrun Kagura was only rated T for teen, so who knows? Guess we'll see.
So what you're saying is there will not be a full physical release on this one.
Well, that's really between you and the game, isn't it?
Nah.
All right, well, moving on then. Another bit of news about an upcoming game. Hey, there's actually another 3DS game on the way from the folks at Atlus. They have announced there is one more game in the Etrian Odyssey series left in them. It is called Etrian Odyssey X, and it will be the last Etrian Odyssey game for the 3DS.
Wow. Wait, so what actual game is this? Is this number 10 in the series?
It's not. And technically, it's not even called Etrian Odyssey X. I believe it's actually supposed to be pronounced Etrian Odyssey Cross, you know, those wacky Japanese. And the reason for that is because it's sort of a crossover, a culmination of the entire Etrian Odyssey series. And so it has like 19 character classes from throughout the Etrian Odyssey games. So it has, you know, all these old Etrian Odyssey character classes. You might remember if you played the previous titles. It's also got a brand new hero class. And so, you know, it's a sort of supposed to be the culmination of everything they have done so far. I'm not sure how many Etrian Odyssey games there have been. Maybe there have been 10. I was thinking there were only like 9 or so. But yeah, I mean, obviously the 3DS is showing its age. A big part of that series is having that map on the second screen. So, you know, maybe this will be the final game of the series. You know, if it comes to Switch, it would kind of lose a lot of its unique character. So, you know, if they decide to not carry it on after this, I wouldn't be too surprised.
Wow.
But yeah, it is set in a flying city. That seems kind of cool. It's going to have lots of first-person dungeon exploration and map making and challenging turn-based battles. And it hits Japan on August 2nd. There is no word yet on a North American release, but I'm pretty sure that all the previous Etrian Odyssey games have come out over here, so I kind of expect this one will too.
Oh, that's cool. Good for the fans of Etrian Odyssey.
Yeah. I mean, I've never really gotten into it. You know, I've played a bunch of them, but, you know, it's never, you know, really hooked me and sunk its teeth into me. But I'm still glad they're bringing it out because, you know, it's great for the fans, like you said.
Yeah.
And speaking of stuff that's been announced for Japan, Level 5 has revealed that a fourth Yo-Kai Watch game is in development. It is coming out for Nintendo Switch, at least in Japan. And apparently it's going to be out later this year.
Oh, cool. I'm not really into the Yo-Kai Watch series. Have you played it much, Chris?
I haven't played it a lot. I've certainly been intrigued. I've played through the demos. I own the first game in the series, but I haven't really ever had the time to get into it, you know, mostly just because there's too much other stuff I've been playing. But, you know, I like what I've played, so I would certainly do it if, you know, I had all the time in the world, that's for sure.
Cool. Yeah, and the fact that this is for Switch kind of intrigues me.
Yeah. I mean, if they bring it out here in North America, you know, maybe that would finally be the one. I mean, it seems like as much as they're trying with that series, it really isn't catching on over here like it has in Japan. But I hope they keep at it. I appreciate that they're trying to, you know, make it work for the audience over here. And I think it would be great if the Switch version, you know, makes it over here in North America. I think that would be excellent.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, that takes care of our news for this week. So let's take an intermission, and then when we come back, we'll discuss this week's big topic, which is Lost in the Past. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which we are calling Lost in the Past. This is things that we miss and we do not miss from bygone gaming eras.
Yeah, I think everybody has things they love and things they hate from the past in relation to gaming, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, gaming has, you know, without a doubt, come a long way in many ways. You know, it's evolved quite a bit over, you know, the more than 30 years of Nintendo's history, and obviously technology has gotten a lot better. You know, there are a lot more, you know, features and things out there that we could never imagine, you know, back during the NES days. But still, you know, there are some things that we miss from those bygone days, and yet there are some things that we are very happy to see fall by the wayside. And so that is what this week's big topic is all about.
Yeah, this is a fun one, I think.
And I guess we'll start out by talking about a few things that we miss, or at least I'll start with something that I miss. And you know, I think this one is not something that is missed by everybody, but personally, I actually miss passwords in games.
What?
Yeah. You know, these days, everything, you know, it saves to the cartridge, or it saves to a memory cart or something like that. And you don't have to worry about entering a password because, you know, even a lot of NES games, you know, there's a battery save and you know, you just save to your save file and that's it. And, you know, don't have to worry about anything else. But, you know, back in the day, a lot of games had passwords, you know, Metroid, Kid Icarus. You know, you had to jot down these passwords to be able to pick up where you left off. And yes, on the one hand, jotting down these passwords was a real pain in the butt, especially if it's something like Metroid, where you know, you have uppercase and lowercase characters, and it could be really hard to read. It's like, is that a J or is that a Q? I'm not sure what it is. You know, something like Legend of the Mystical Ninja, where it had this not only a massive password that included uppercase and lowercase and numbers and symbols. And so, you know, I can see all the reasons why people wouldn't like passwords. But the reason I did like them is because you could pick up and, you know, continue your game from any place at any time. Like, you know, in Mega Man, say like in Mega Man 2, you know, I could, you know, beat any character and then I could just, you know, start the game with, you know, that particular weapon. It's like, okay, so I don't need to beat Metal Man every time. I can just punch in this password. Now I can play through the game and I'm already starting with Metal Man's weapon. Or, you know, maybe it's just, you know, in Metroid, I want to pick up right after Kraid, and that's just where I want to, you know, restart the game and, you know, play the second half of the game, but not the first half. And when you've got battery saves, a lot of times that's not possible. I just like to be able to jump back to, you know, any point in the past and pick up the game from that spot. And that is why I miss passwords.
Well, it is literally on my don't miss list.
Fair enough.
So for me, I actually hated passwords.
Well, like I said, there's a lot of reasons for that, and I totally understand it.
Yeah, I think you have a compelling point. I like the Mega Man example where you can kind of start where you want, you know, with certain bosses, beat all that.
Like, I was thinking about Link to the Past the other day, and it's like, you know, it's very convenient to have a regular, you know, battery save for that game, but like, I always really like that game you know, it's really fun after you get the hook shot. And so if there was a way to, you know, enter a password and just pick up after that dungeon where you got the hook shot, I would probably do that and just, you know, play the game from that point on a whole bunch, if it were possible with a password. But it's not, because it's a battery save, you know?
Yeah. There was one game in particular that ruined passwords for me, and
oh yeah,
I wonder if you can guess it.
Huh, if it's not the ones I mentioned, if it's not Kid Icarus, it's not Metroid, and it's not Mystical Ninja, I'm not really sure.
It's actually Faxanadu.
Oh, okay.
That game had like italic font for its passwords, and it just, it was like, it made no sense. And I would say that maybe I had like a 40% accuracy rating on my passwords that I wrote down for that game.
Yeah. I mean, I literally changed the way I wrote because of the passwords in Metroid. Like, you know, I learned to make my Z's and my 2's look very different, because if I didn't, I was not going to be able to get that password to work. You know, I started drawing my J's in very different ways from other letters to make sure that password works. So yeah, they have really influenced me a lot, and I totally see why you could put that on your list.
You know, I did like the Mega Man passwords. I always thought that was kind of fun. It was like a giant like checkerboard.
Yeah, it was a big grid.
And you had to, like, I think originally wasn't it just one color, and then later they added red and blue dots? And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then I just write an R or a B wherever they were.
A1, B2, B4, C1, C5, D1, D3, E3, E5.
Yes. anyways, no, I don't have the fond memories that you do. I've feel the frustration more than anything, but you know what, I can see the draw.
Well, I certainly see it from your side too. And speaking of passwords, I have to bring up this one game that has always stood out to me for its password. That is G.I. Joe the Atlantis Factor, because whereas Mega Man, you know, had this grid that you would use to enter the password, this G.I. Joe game had 14 grids, and you had to enter letters onto each one of them.
Wow.
14 3x3 grids. Yeah.
Wow. That sounds insane.
That one I definitely would have preferred a battery save. Yeah, that's for sure.
Cool.
Anyway, moving on. What's another thing that I miss? I also miss codes. I miss cheat codes.
Yes.
Sometimes cheat codes came in the form of passwords. That was one of the cool things about passwords, is you could like put in a special password like Justin Bailey or Danger Terror Horror or 007373 5963, and you would get something cool out of the game. You know, or you would just have, you know, a button input code to do whatever. And, you know, obviously, you know, it's cheating, but it's also just a great way to bring people back to the game. I mean, how many people would have ever finished Contra without the 30 lives code?
Yeah.
How many people would have finished Life Force without the 30 lives code?
Yep.
And then, you know, just for a game that, you know, maybe you've played it and you've beaten it, it's like, oh, here's a code that, you know, suddenly I've got a different hat on or something. You enter that code and it'll get me playing the game again. You know, they didn't really do things like that back in the day. It was usually things very functional, you know, level select, you know, giving some sort of power up, extra lives, things of that nature. But yeah, I wish that was something that the game still had.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I had that on my list. Meaningful cheat codes is what I had. You know, I think that's what it was. It was like, you know, they all seemed like they served a purpose, or there was this, you know, sort of felt like you were like going behind the curtain and actually able to sort of goof around with like stuff the developers got to use. And
yeah, sometimes that was true.
Yeah, and just like maybe fly through a level, or you know, take your time and, you know, see something that you never had seen in the game before, because normally you're just trying to like fight for your life. And instead you can kind of take it easy and you know, explore a little bit more or try some things you normally wouldn't be able to do. So agreed. I miss that feeling of like, yeah, this code is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it did give you a lot of chance to, you know, discover new things. But, you know, even if it was just like a sound test or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that was cool to me. Like, Ninja Gaiden didn't have any real cheat codes, but did have a sound test, and I would use that a lot, you know, just because I love the music to that game and it was fun to do. And, you know, even if I didn't really feel like, you know, playing through the whole game from start to finish, I'd be like, well, I see there's a cheat code out for it. Let's, you know, use the sound test code and listen to some cool tunes.
Yeah.
And if I were making a game today, I would absolutely make sure it had some sort of cheat code in there, you know, whether it was a level select or extra lives yep. or, you know, just something silly like it, you know, changes the outfit of your character or something. I mean, I'm not so much about the it has to be meaningful, but I just like the idea of making people, you know, fire up these games again and want to get, you know, something extra out of it, you know, even if you're otherwise done with it.
Yeah. I also always thought that there was like some kind of like really positive feeling when you enter in a cheat code successfully, especially if it was difficult, you know, like the Contra code. I remember sometimes like people goofing that up or, you know, not knowing exactly how or where to enter a code. And then you do it and it's like, yes, unlock.
Yeah, I guess so.
I guess it was almost like the achievement unlocked for the first time. Like it really kind of felt the same way.
Yeah, a lot of times there was like a really tight time restriction to get those codes in. So yeah, I see what you're saying.
Cool.
So what else do you have on your list of things you miss?
Well, Chris, one thing I miss is co-op mode being fairly standard. Yeah, there was just this, it felt like there was this, you know, I guess at that time, a lot of game consoles came with two controllers or the arcade had two controllers. You basically always were playing games where you could play someone on the other controller or joystick or whatever, what have you. And the games were just sort of built that way. It was like, well, we've got this extra controller sitting here. Might as well put a player two support in.
I guess that's kind of true. There were, it did seem like a lot more couch co-op games, you know, back in the NES and Super NES. And, you know, especially, I guess, the N64 days with its four controller ports and, you know, sort of a reason to have, you know, constant couch co-op on that thing. You know, there are a lot of games that weren't also. I mean, some of my all-time favorite games, you know, were single player, you know, the Final Fantasies and Castlevanias and Mega Mans of the world. But yeah, it certainly does seem like it had fallen by the wayside in recent years. But I guess on the other hand, it feels like with Switch, it's really made a comeback, in my opinion. You know, like you said, you know, having that second controller and knowing it's always there was a big part of probably why so many games were co-op. And now that is the case once again with Switch, you know, I feel like it's kind of going back that way. You know, I especially look at some of the games from Nicholas and, like, you know, Cave Story, they added two-player co-op to that. Tiny Barbarian was supposed to be a single-player game. They added co-op to that.
Yep.
And, you know, I think there are a lot of other similar stories where games are getting co-op. I mean, heck, like we just talked about a little bit ago, Harvest Moon has a co-op mode in the new Switch version. So, yeah, I think we are back, you know, to getting more local co-op games on current systems. I think Switch and its built-in set controller is part of that.
I was totally trying to tie it back into Switch, and it worked. So here we go.
All right. Well, you know, I guess, you know, along similar lines, you know, a genre that, you know, was all about having co-op play and a genre that has not been around really in a long time is beat-em-ups.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm just a big fan of beat-em-ups, you know, when they're done well. You know, we talked about Bad Dudes earlier. That is not my favorite beat-em-up.
but is not particularly done well.
No. But, you know, some of the Double Dragon games are really good. I love Final Fight and a lot of the Final Fight sequels.
You just love, it. Love Mike Haggar. I love
Streets of Rage. Well, yes, he's a lovely man. And, you know, it's a genre that has pretty much died off. You don't really see games like that anymore. You know, I think I even did a whole episode talking about, you know, the pros and cons of various beat-em-ups and, you know, the difference between a great beat-em-up and a not great beat-em-up. And, you know, it's just all about, you know, how your enemy reacts and how you react to the enemy and just that whole give and take.
Yep.
And, you know, that is why I like it so much when it is done well and you get that, you know, real satisfying feeling of, you know, punching out an opponent or delivering a flying pile driver. It's really, really fun.
Right.
And
or Golden Axe, you know, they grab and beat you down while your friends are doing other stuff, like kicking a dwarf around.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's just something that, you know, I mean, you could say that some, you know, 3D action games still have some, you know, 2D beat-em-up DNA, but it's not really the same.
No.
And so, you know, I am hopeful there'll be, you know, more games like that, you know, someday. But, yeah, it's something that I do miss. You know, Double Dragon 4 didn't really cut the mustard. Yeah, I wish there were more.
Yeah, that is weird. It's kind of a funny genre to just have disappeared. But yeah, I mean, there were so many at one point. I mean, even like the classic arcade Ninja Turtles.
Yep, and one of my all time favorites.
The mm-hmm. Simpsons game, and then also X-Men, of course, which was pretty legendary.
Yep, three Konami all time greats.
Yeah, so it is sad that that's gone away. It almost makes you wish that some indie game developer would make something like that, especially for the Switch, now that something like that would be so welcome.
Yeah, I mean, I know a few of them are in development. I remember seeing that the guy behind you know, 90s arcade racer is working on a side-scrolling beat-em-up.
Nice.
And I think I've seen some others as well. So it's not like it's totally dead, but, you know, it was you know, pretty prominent back in the day, and now it's not. But, yeah, I mean, it was really the switch from 2D to 3D where they went away, because it just didn't work as well in 3D. But, you know, now that there's so many more 2D games, now that there's indie opportunities to make 2D games and, you know, have, you know, diverse gameplay styles like that, we could see a comeback.
Yeah, there's almost indie-less opportunities.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Sorry.
So, what else you got?
I think I'm pretty much just beating you to the punch on this one, but I gotta say, I miss instruction booklets.
Oh, that isn't actually one I had written down, but you make a very good point. Yeah, yeah. I do too. It's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, honestly, Chris, now, you know, I download a lot of games, and I'm happy to do that. I'm, you know, at a different point in my life when I was younger, it was more fun to collect things and had, you know, endless amounts of storage.
It's convenient, I admit that.
And, you know, the problem is that now there just isn't as much a compelling reason to buy the physical version, at least for me in most cases. The games back then were a little lacking in solid detail. So sometimes the instruction booklet really kind of colored in the parts that were missing completely from the game.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of times they told you all the backstory of the game and the characters and the enemies, and that stuff was not really presented in the game. Also, the games, you know, didn't have tutorials back then. But yeah, it was like this great window into, you know, so many aspects of the game. You know, we talked about before how the characters in F-Zero don't actually appear in the game. It was only through the manual that you found out about, you know, Captain Falcon, the bounty hunter, and these other rival racers.
Yeah.
And that was something only possible done through the manuals. And a lot of times it also just gave you, you know, this really great look into, you know, all the behind-the-scenes production, this beautiful artwork, and, you know, seeing the cool stuff that awaited you. So, yeah, that's a good pick.
Yeah, it's also fun to just kind of see how games have progressed. I mean, when you pick up the original Super Mario Brothers manual, it's funny how they talk about it. Like, you know, you yeah. jump on a Goomba and he dies. And they just don't use that term much anymore for video games, especially Nintendo games.
That's true. You also found out that the Mushroom Kingdom citizens were all, like, turned into blocks and shrubs, which, you know, is a fact I never would have known if I hadn't read the manual.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's Who slightly knew? Terrifying for an 8-year-old boy, but...
Yeah, especially when Mario was running around smashing those blocks. Like, did he just destroy a Mushroom Kingdom citizen there with his head and his fist? I don't know. That's kind of weird now that I'm reading about it.
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre.
Nonetheless, yeah, I totally am on board with you about this one. I do miss instruction manuals. I love it that some companies still do them. Xseed almost always does manuals.
Yep.
Nicholas tends to put manuals at least in the first runs of their games. So I'm totally glad that there are still some companies that are out there and doing it.
Yep. Agreed.
Along those same lines, I guess something you could kind of say is now, you know, from a bygone era, is video game magazines, you know?
Yeah. Hey, whoa.
Just love having those tangible magazines. It's very much the same thing. It gives you all that insight into the games. And, you know, unlike a website, you know, it's something that you can hang on to. And I don't know. I would just tend to read through some of my favorite articles over and over and over again. And, you know, just, you know, look at these, you know, as like tomes that would give me so much insight into the game world. You know, they'd only arrive at a monthly basis.
Yep.
And so part of that was, you know, being able just to kick back and have like a really deep read. It wasn't, you know, every single day trying to pound down the door with the latest stuff.
Right.
And usually, you know, at Nintendo Power, when we were still doing it, we would try to deliver something that was, you know, deeper and more compelling than just the everyday, you know, stuff you would be able to get off the internet.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, you know, you were talking a little bit pre-internet, mm-hmm. you know, back then you really had not a lot of way of getting information about games, codes, stuff like that outside the playground. There was something about being able to read through a video game magazine that covered like the latest, you know, game that was headed to the Super Nintendo. And, you know, Nintendo Power played a big part of that in my childhood.
Yep, me too, of course.
So did EGM. I had, you know, a soft place for that.
Yep, same here.
Sad to see it go by the wayside.
Yep, for sure.
Even though it's not completely gone, obviously. It's just...
It's true.
I feel like the way that video game magazines interact with the fans is much different than it was when we were young. And maybe that's a little bit of me just, like, waxing nostalgic. I don't know. It was different than it is now. I'll just say that.
Well, that is definitely true. And yeah, like you said, there are still magazines. There are, you know, smaller publications that are carrying on the traditional legacy of Nintendo Power. Obviously, Game Informer is still around. But it's not like before where you would go to the newsstand or go to the grocery store and you would see, you know, like 5, 8, 10, you know, awesome video game magazines just packed to the brim with information. And that was just, it was such a great time. And you know, obviously something we both miss.
Yeah. I remember just like going to the magazine aisle and I know this is terrible, but just like sitting there and reading them and letting like a half hour pass because there were just so many video game magazines, you know, I wasn't sure which one to buy. And then,
hey, when you're a kid, you do what you gotta do.
Yep.
So another one that I've got on my list is Konami.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's funny. We were just talking about that.
Yeah. We talked about how they made some of the great arcade games. We talked about some of their great NES games. And we talked about Konami a lot on this show because they have been such a big part of, you know, Nintendo's past systems. I mean, you know, they're on the Super NES Classic. They're on the NES Classic. And they continued making games, you know, up on into modern times pretty much. Until just a few years ago when they decided, no, we're just going to be crappy now and not make new games. And, I mean, there are so many classic IPs that they're responsible for. Contra, Castlevania, Gradius, Mystical Ninja,
yeah.
Metal Gear, Suikoden, you know, Dance Dance Revolution. I'm sure there are several others that I will be embarrassed about later when I remember that I didn't say them. But, you know, they were such a great company, and it's so sad to see how they have, you know, fallen from prominence. So that's one that I definitely miss.
Yeah, I think you miss Blades of Steel.
indeed.
And Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
I don't think that's their IP.
Oh, yeah, but, you're right.
They certainly had a hand in that one, yeah. True enough. And I guess, you know, along similar lines, I really miss having Final Fantasy on Nintendo consoles.
Yeah.
I mean, it obviously hasn't gone away totally. They are still putting Final Fantasy games on Nintendo systems. But do you realize it has been 20 years, more than 20 years, since we got a mainline original Final Fantasy game on Nintendo systems? And that was Final Fantasy VI, Final Fantasy III, back on the Super Nintendo. You know, everything since then has either been a port or a spinoff of some sort, or it's been a, you know, mainline Final Fantasy game on some other console. And it just seems crazy that it has been so long since we got real Final Fantasy games. I mean, people would freak the heck out even if we were getting, you know, ports on, you know, 3DS of Final Fantasy 7 or 8 or 9.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I feel like the time has totally come with Switch and its popularity that, you know, we should be getting, you know, the latest and greatest Final Fantasy games on Nintendo systems. So something I miss, you know, I'm not really holding my breath on that one, but I do miss the days when Final Fantasy and Nintendo were synonymous.
Yeah, it really was like that. You know, they seemed to go hand in hand, and I remember just really enjoying those games back then, and I too pine for the day when that may happen again, but who knows?
Yep. That'll be nice. And I guess the last thing I would mention as something that I miss from an era gone by, not an era that went away too terribly long ago, but I actually miss Street Pass. And, you know, the 3DS is still alive and kicking. It's still doing its thing. Street Pass technically does still exist.
Yep.
But, man, I can barely even think of the last time I got a Street Pass from anybody. I don't know anyone who really carries their system around anymore. I went to Disneyland about 15 18 months ago or so and was carrying it around with me then. And I got like 5 street passes the entire day. And if you're not going to get street passes at the happiest place on earth,
what the heck?
You know, where are you going to get? I mean, other than, you know, dropping by Nintendo headquarters once in a while, but that's not very likely for most of us.
That's the other happiest place on earth.
Yeah, sometimes. So, yeah, I really, you know, wish that were continuing. I wish they would add something like that to Switch or, you know, maybe to, you know, whatever hardware they do in the future. But that was something that I really enjoyed and would love to see make a comeback.
Yeah, no kidding. It was probably one of the most overlooked and underrated features of the 3DS. Leave it to Nintendo to make some, like, awesome feature that is just impossible to actually, like, tell anyone about. You just have to be able to, like, play it and see it for yourself. And you're like, oh, wow, this is really cool.
It's true. It's true. If you just try to explain it to someone, it doesn't really sound that compelling.
No.
But, I mean, for me, you know, I was walking all over the place with that thing. Everywhere I went, I would bring my 3DS with me. You know, part of it was because I wanted to, you know, collect those coins from walking around with it. Part of it was because I wanted to get you know, Street Pass partner so I could play those games. But
totally.
Yeah, it's a bummer that it is not in Switch.
Well, I mean, I remember going to like an event, you know, like a PAX or something, and forgetting my 3DS, and it would just be, I would be bummed out the entire day that I never got a Street Pass.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would just think, look at all these missed opportunities, you know, and or you fly internationally or you fly even, you know, even within the States, you'd always Street Pass with somebody who you didn't have in your queue yet.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
And it's funny because the Switch seems like it would be such a perfect console for it, especially because you could have more Street Passes than just the 10 that they allowed on the 3DS.
Yeah,
I think there was something about it only being 10 that like kind of made it compelling to constantly check because you didn't want to like waste Street Passes.
Yeah, there are times I would be at Comic-Con and I would just have to, you know, sit down for a while, just have to, you know, clear out all my Street Passes. Okay, all right. Oh, I got 10 more while I was doing that. Okay, got to clear. Okay, all right. Now I can go back to business here.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny if you actually look at like my game time spent on 3DS, I swear to God, I think I've played Street Pass more than any other game.
And yeah, I think mine is definitely up there.
And it's just because it's like, well, yes, that's what you do. You mm-hmm. You need to take that time to whittle down your queue and also, you know, make sure you utilize all the colors and of player shirts you got and all the mini games. And yeah, anyway, mm-hmm. A lot of good time spent playing that. And I wish that it would come out for Switch, but I miss that too, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll have to take my 3DS with me when I go to, you know, PAX or E3 or Comic-Con this year and, you know, see if I still get hits then. If it doesn't happen then I know it's well and truly dead.
Can you please make a YouTube video while you're trying that?
Probably not, but I'll see what I can do.
I would watch it.
All right, then. Moving along, then, to things that we do not miss from gaming eras past. Pete, what do you got?
Well, Chris, one thing I do not miss is games that almost give you zero guidance.
Huh.
And I say that a little begrudgingly because it's not 100% true. But, you know, imagine like Zelda. You start off in that game and you just have no idea what to do. And it works. Yeah. And it works. And, you know, but by today's standards, the amount of non-direction that they give you in that game is unreal.
Yeah, like we were saying, I mean, pretty much all that was in the manual. There was no hand-holding. There was no tutorial. If you didn't read the manual and learn stuff there, then you were kind of out of luck, yeah.
Games these days do a really good job of, you know, kind of weaving a tutorial into the gameplay itself.
Yep, usually.
And, you know, I think that that is an art form that's been picked up in the last 10 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas back in the day, you know, a lot of times you were just kind of thrown into a game. Now, I personally did enjoy that sometimes, but if I were to pick up a game now that I really had no clue what was going on, like let's say a Zelda, for example, I think I would be so frustrated I probably wouldn't play the game because, you know, it, as fun as it is if I have to burn every bush on the screen to find a secret, I'm probably not doing that.
Well, that's what Zelda was like back then, man. That's what it was, burn every bush on the screen.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's just at this point in my life, I don't have that kind of time. Like, I just, I'm not that obsessive compulsive.
Okay, fair enough. I guess along similar lines, I would say one of the things that I do not miss is limited continues.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there's a lot to be said about, obviously games these days, aren't nearly as challenging as games back in the old days. I would not necessarily say that is a bad thing. I mean, yeah, sometimes it seems like games might be too easy, but sometimes if you spend a couple hours playing through a game and then you run out of continues and it's just all the way back to the beginning, it's like, oh man, I don't want to do that all over again.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that you'd have to start a game from scratch, like by today's standards, is just insane.
Mm-hmm. I mean, back then, if you had a password, that's great. If you had a battery save, that's great. But a lot of them did not, and it was nothing. And you had like your three continues, then it is all over. And I definitely appreciate being able to, more or less, try again from where you failed. That's certainly a modern convenience I appreciate.
Yeah, although it is funny to see games come back where, that playstyle, kind of like Dark Souls and Demon Souls and all that.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely still some hardcore stuff out there, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's funny that that's become like a niche genre, though, because it's like that's how every game was back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, but at least those still let you save your progress in some way.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the day, there was literally, you're starting the game as if you just bought it.
Yep. Very true, and I can't say I miss that. What else for you?
Well, Chris, I don't miss the fact that when you buy a game, there is literally no way to have it updated.
Ah, huh.
And I know it's a double-edged sword, and people kind of, don't necessarily like Big Brother messing with your game that you've bought. But at the same time, think about, the DLC that exists and the bugs that are fixed post-game launch. And I know, again, that's like, there's so many double-edged swords to that. At the same time, it's just nice.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that, if I were going to bring up this topic, which I wasn't planning to, I would say, I kind of miss just being able to get a complete game out of the box and like, yes, it's actually going to work and I can get the complete entire experience for my, $30 or $50 and don't have to worry about, whether I have to pay more for additional upgrades or all that stuff. So yeah, I think I'm kind of on the opposite side of you on this one.
Wow.
But I guess in some cases, it's like, it is really cool to be like, oh, I'm done with Breath of the Wild. Oh, well, guess what? Here's another 10 hours of gameplay for you or something like that.
Well, you couldn't have your precious ninja mode in Shantae, and you couldn't have your beach mode.
That's right. Exactly.
Certainly not have your, I forgot the other mode.
Well, I mean, you could. They could have done it all at once, but yeah, it totally would have been a lot less likely. You would have had to pay for probably, Shantae Special Edition. That would have had all the extra stuff in there. You would have had to buy it all over again for $30 instead of $8, That's how it was. Street Fighter would come out every year, and it's like, here's some minor upgrades. Buy a brand new cartridge for $60. So yes, in that sense, it is certainly appreciated.
But yeah, I think if I have to choose a side of the fence, I'm gonna land on the side where I do appreciate that games can be fixed post launch, and
yeah, I just wish they weren't so broken at launch sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Nintendo really never had that problem, but there are definitely some companies out there that were notorious for having some problems in their games.
Yeah, it's not something that we encounter that much with Nintendo, but knowing that some company's just going to put out a crappy product and be like, well, you can just download this ginormous patch on day one, that kind of chaps my hide,
Indeed.
Something that I do not miss, though, would be low-poly models, low-poly graphics. I know a lot of people have, fond memories of the N64 days. For me, when it comes to the visuals, I am glad we are beyond that. I'm glad that, graphics have progressed quite a bit since, those initial polygonal visuals in Star Fox and Stunt Race FX, and yes, then the N64. I know I mentioned it before that I felt like, this is great technology. Someday it'll get there. It has now got there. I am very, very happy that, 3D visuals look fantastic and we don't have to deal with those crude 3D models anymore. So that's something I sure don't miss.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. When you go back to the Nintendo 64 these days, it's almost hard to believe how bad it looked.
Yeah, I mean, even, all-time great games like Mario 64 and Star Fox 64 and Ocarina of Time, It's like, oh, wow, these are kind of rough to look at. I'll get reaccustomed to it very quickly and I'll be okay with it. But at first it's like, Jaggy's pointing out my eyes,
Yeah, I mean, it really is almost impossible to go, wow, at one point I thought this was a pretty game.
Yeah.
One thing I don't miss, Chris, is the insane difficulty levels. And I think you kind of covered this on the no continues.
Yeah.
But just, you know, a lot of the games that came out of the arcade were like designed to just steal your quarters.
It's true. They were.
So,
I mean, a lot of times the home adaptations, you know, they took that into account. And so they weren't quite as brutal. But yeah, it's totally true.
Yeah. Or like, you know, you get the one hit kills or, you know.
I mean, I think more importantly, it's that, you know, these games weren't really long. If you could just sit down and play it from start to finish, you'll be done in an hour or two. How do they make that last? Well, they kill you a lot, and so you just keep playing and keep playing and keep playing and keep playing,
right,
you know, until you're good enough to beat the game.
Right, or not.
But it was pretty brutal.
Yeah. I mean, I can honestly say I probably didn't beat most of the games that were that hard on NES.
I never beat Battletoads.
Yeah. I don't think I ever made it past the warp bike levels.
Ah. Those were definitely rough.
What about you, Chris? What else?
Well, I'm going to mention two things at once, things that have to do with controllers. I do not miss wires. I do not miss wires at all. It's nice to be able to, you know, play in any position without worrying about how your controller is plugged into the console. You know, I can, you know, lay down on my back on the couch and play it that way if I want. That is much appreciated to have wireless controllers.
Oh, man, no kidding.
And along those same lines, I really appreciate not having to have batteries in my controllers. You know, at first, we went without wires, but we had to have batteries. You know, that was the trade-off.
Yep.
But then we got to the point where you just have to, you know, charge it. You know, maybe I have to have a USB connector for a little bit to recharge my Switch Pro controller. But for the most part, you know, I can let it charge overnight. I can detach it, and then I can play all day. You know, I was just playing, you know, Wii U when I was playing Shantae, like I mentioned, and I was shocked, you know, how quickly I kind of ran out of battery power. It's like, oh boy, I've only been playing this for like 3 hours, and I have to recharge it again. But still, that's, you know, I think a better option than, you know, having to, you know, replace tons and tons of batteries. And technology is constantly improving, so I think they've finally found, you know, like the ultimate sweet spot with Switch, where no wires, no batteries, charge it overnight, it's great. Or, you know, if you're playing with the Joy-Cons, you know, you charge them while you just plug into the system there. So, yeah, I am very happy about how far controller technology has come.
Yeah, I forget that you don't really have to plug the Joy-Cons at all into, you know, find a wire and plug it in. It's pretty cool that it just hooks up to the system and then the whole thing charges.
Yeah, I'm so used to playing with a Pro controller that I kind of forget about that sometimes, but it is a really, really convenient feature.
Yep.
Anything else for you?
I was just going to say that, you know, I don't miss the fact that you could lose save game files.
Oh, yeah, I know all about that.
I mean, sometimes due to batteries dying, sometimes due to, you know, corruption, sometimes...
Sometimes due to human error deleting your Final Fantasy VI save data.
Hey, now. Yeah, maybe. Maybe that happened. Maybe not.
But yeah, it is kind of nice that you don't have to, you know, see the warning message, hold down reset while holding in the power button. Otherwise, it's going to probably erase your game, man.
Yeah, and I know that it's a sore spot because people still want to be able to back up their Switch save files.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, for the most part, your save files don't just disappear the way they used to or could if you owned a game long enough. And yeah, it's nice to have that option, and I don't miss the way that save games used to work that, you know, hopefully would be there 10 years later.
Yeah, I never had a whole lot of problem with it, but I do remember one time I was visiting my uncle, and, you know, he was really into the Super Nintendo, and, you know, he was having some trouble with Super Mario World, and so I had fired it up. He'd been at work, and I, you know, went through and completed the game, you know, 96 plus the star at the end. So I was like, you know, all proud to show him what I had done. And I fired up and the whole thing's gone.
Wow.
Completely erased. My file, his file, everyone's file, all the progress, all gone. So, you know, still not perfect these days, but that's a lot less likely to happen.
Well, at least it you weren't true. Mad about it.
I was pretty shocked.
Wait, which one ranks higher on the Chrisometer? Me deleting your Final Fantasy save file or that?
Oh, definitely the Final Fantasy. It's, you're off the hook yet. No, sir.
Let the fan fiction continue.
Well, the last topic I want to bring up that I do not miss is high cartridge prices.
Ah, do tell.
And, you know, that's something we really don't have to deal with these days. You know, games are pretty standard prices. I have to say, you know, it's pretty fortunate that, you know, games have maintained a fairly steady price point over all these years. You know, back in the NES days, it was like, you know, $50 for a cartridge. And, you know, these days it's $50, $60. Even after inflation with all that time, it's about the same thing. But, you know, like during the Super NES and the N64 era to a lesser extent, you know, sometimes these cartridge prices would just get insane. And, you know, like Final Fantasy III was probably, you know, like $80 or something. I remember paying, you know, like $85 for, you know, WWF Raw or something like that. And just, you know, some really ridiculous prices. You know, Castlevania 3, I remember there was one store selling it for probably, you know, $70, and that was an NES game. You know, these days, of course, a lot of times, you know, corporations do try to, you know, make up for the standard price by, you know, having the special editions, having the extra DLC. But I feel like you do get a lot more for your money, and indeed, you're definitely not paying, you know, these crazy $70, $80, $85 prices out of the gate. And I am definitely glad that that has gone by the wayside.
Yeah, speaking of which, I think I appreciate that games come in a variety of prices now.
Yeah.
That didn't really happen, you know, bygone eras.
Yeah, that is absolutely true as well. Good point. Very good point.
Woo!
And with that said, I think that brings this topic to a close. As we've said, you know, there's been a lot of changes in video games over the past 30-plus years. You know, in a lot of ways, they've made things better. You know, in some ways, there are things that, you know, we still wish were around. But anyway you look at it, I hope this has been at least an informative and amusing discussion, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that means it is time to wrap up this week's episode of the podcast.
Wait a minute. Isn't there something else?
Oh, yes. You're right. I suppose that's true. We do have time for one more thing, and that would be a dramatic reading.
Wow.
This time, it comes from the pages of Nintendo Power Volume 3. It is their video shorts preview of Mylon's Secret Castle. The evil warlord has stolen the musical instruments from the people of Hudson and is holding Queen Eliza captive deep inside her secret castle. You must guide brave Mylon through the castle's many rooms. If Mylon completes his tasks, he will find a large and imposing monster in the demon monster room, guarding the entrance to the next level. Defeating each monster will uncover a crystal ball. After Mylon collects all 7 crystal balls, he will still need 2 secret items in order to save Queen Eliza from the evil warlord. As Mylon makes his way through the maze rooms, he must find secret items, money, and hidden rooms. The money will come in handy in buying important items in the little shops that are placed throughout the castle. Finding a music box will advance Mylon to a bonus stage, where he can collect musical notes for big bucks. A honeycomb will extend and fill his energy. But beware, the evil warlord knows that you're coming and has placed all sorts of demons, menaces, and traps to thwart your success.
Chris, true or false, will you name your firstborn child Mylon?
No, probably not. But I might build a demon monster room for him to play in.
Perfect. That was a weird dramatic reading.
Yeah. Yeah, I never played Mylon's Secret Castle very much. I'm sure I did play it a little bit back in the day, but I never owned it or anything like that. You?
I know I did play it too. I don't really remember a lot about it. I remember the box more than anything. It was like a castle with lightning on it. And it was a blue box.
Nope, sorry. How do you remember that? My apologies, Mylon.
Wow. Mylon's pissed.
I'll bet. I would be too. Especially with those demon monster rooms filled with honeycombs or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Pete at BurlyRedYeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud.
Thanks for playing.
And our very hungry friend, Pac-Man. We will see you next time.